The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Monday, thanks for being with us. We're going to have Jordan Spurgeon here momentarily from out at the Diamondbacks yesterday. Some big news, I think, over the weekend. Devin Henry was down at Daytona. Michael Jordan sued NASCAR in December, beat him. And then yesterday he wins a race. Devin has been down at Daytona, brought to you by the people at Phoenix Raceway. So we're going to check in just on around that, not with Devin specifically, but around that. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. The Big Ten is wanting to expand to a 24-team playoff by 2028. And me, if I'm king for a day, it's like, what are we waiting for here? I'm going to talk to John about that. That happened over the weekend. And then John wrote a column about the racist Mormon chants that have been going on within the Big 12, and the Big 12 is wanting to address that. I don't know how you can address it because it's happened now at four different courts, and BYU plays at U of A on Wednesday night. And, you know, it's bleep the Mormons is what the fans, and it's the student sections. But if you're going to give a technical foul, all it takes is a student for the opposing team to say it. How do you know? So this isn't something easy to clean up. John wrote about it over the weekend. I thought an interesting column. We'll talk with John. And then Daniel the Draftnik, the NFL draft, comes up on April 18th. We will be live at Harrah's Auction in their brand new sports bar with Brian Urlacher, the Hall of Famer, and Daniel the Draftnik and myself making picks, having fun. That'll be at Harrah's. That will be in April. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that's Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. Had a great weekend. Watched very little of the NBA All-Star. Watched a ton of the Olympics. I'm thinking that at 6'8", I would have never made it as a bobsledder. I'm looking at these sports with my wife saying, you know, that looks really cool to be the guy that skates backwards and through the air. I would break ankles, and I've already torn my knees up twice. So there's just not a sport for me, but I enjoy it a great deal. And I loved watching Pebble Beach yesterday because when you see pro golfers in 35-mile-per-hour winds with rain sideways, it's fun. We need more of that. We need more of that in sports. But I thought the biggest story over the weekend in our great state was the Diamondbacks, and yesterday morning out at the Diamondbacks spring training facility, Spurge was out there, and he joins us now for a couple of minutes. This was Ken Kendrick and Derek Hall. So you had the owner and you had the president. We're going to hear some sound clips here in a second, but this kind of came out of the blue. I know they do this every year, Jordan, but you were out there like what? 8:30 in the morning. It was very early for them to say, okay, let's talk to the media.
Yeah. Got out there just right at the end of clubhouse hours and ran into some guys. I said, hey, did you hear the news? I'm like, what, are we busy today? They're like, yeah, Mike's going to talk later. And Ken and Derek are going to talk. And Zach and Merrill are going to talk eventually with Tori. And it wasn't announced. And it was just kind of a thing in the clubhouse. If you were there, you got it. If you weren't, you showed up a little bit later, and that's just part of the deal. And after they talked with the team and had their yearly, you know, full squad day talk with everybody, they just decided they wanted to talk to the media right then and there. So it kind of came together fast. And at first it was me and Gus over at AZ Family and a couple writers, and people started kind of going in because they talked for about 40 minutes. So people were slowly showing up throughout that and getting some questions repeated so they can get it for their TV cameras and all that stuff. But it was great. I mean, the fact that they were open and honest for 40 minutes uninhibited was pretty cool.
So let's hear from some of these. This is Ken Kendrick, the owner of the Diamondbacks.
I want us to be successful. I want our fans to feel that we are committed to investing every dollar possible and putting the best team we can put together on the field.
So we've heard stuff like that before from owners. And the Diamondbacks, you know, this, I'll get over to you on the Zach Gallen part of it. So he comes back. Their payroll is going to be about the same. We'll hear from him on that a little bit. In fact, let's hear from Ken Kendrick now on the payroll.
Last year in payroll, in the top five, when you think of it in the way that if you're me, you need to, and that is, what percentage of your revenue are you spending on your team? And we were in the top five in all of baseball last year, and lo and behold, we're back in that spot. Probably it's all the bidding isn't over, but we're probably going to be in that spot with the money that we're spending. But I want to succeed. I want to win. I want to spend the money that we have and maybe then some. And now 2 years in a row, we've done it. Last year, it didn't work out like we would have wanted. I think we can all acknowledge significant beyond norm injury was a factor.
Okay, and then we'll finish with this one. This is something that, again, I hear from owners, and most times they're not being truthful. They just are. They're full of it.
Partnership with the fans. That's the way I see what we do. We're in a partnership with our fans. They generate revenue by buying tickets and coming to ball games and supporting us. And as a good partner, we need to take the money they spend and invest it wisely, and that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, we're hoping to put a good team on the field, and we hope the fans will support it.
So, Spurge, I don't get that very often, and you're out there yesterday, and that leads me over to Zach Gallen. So, $20 million, right? $22 million for Zach to come back?
Yeah, a lot of it's going to be deferred. I think it's going to hit somewhere on 18. He's going to come home with like 13 this year, and then he's going to get a lot of it in year 6, 7, and 8 down the road. It's a very complicated contract. It's basically what he would have made over the qualifying offer that they had extended to him, but now it'll be technically less in actual value because he's not going to see a lot of that money until year, you know, 6 years from now, basically. So interesting deal, but it's something that they just didn't want to pass up. And it, you know, you talk about the bullpen and adding Zach Gallen into your rotation potentially bolsters the bullpen as well, while also giving you more depth in the rotation. So it's kind of a no-brainer for both sides. And it's an interesting deal, though. We talk a lot about deferred money with the Dodgers, and, you know, D-backs doing a little bit of that with this deal.
What stood out to you yesterday? I'm giving you what stood out to me. What stood out to you?
Yeah, you know, I just think it served as a fresh reminder. You know, a lot of people talk about there's a lot of owners in baseball that don't necessarily spend the revenue that they're making from their teams, from the games, from the fans back into the roster. And you see that reflected in the way that they spend their money. The D-backs are spending what they can. People don't realize outside of the World Series, or in the last 2 years, they've spent a lot of money and they have not made money the last 2 years overall.
Fifth highest payroll in baseball.
Exactly. And so they aren't even in a profit. But Ken Kendrick, what stands out, when the more I've heard him talk over the years, he's just such a baseball fan and he wants this team to win so badly. And so he's willing to spend. And yeah, they've had some deals not work out. But I mean, the last 10 years, really, the whole Torii, you know, outside of a couple of years where you knew the team was going to be really bad and have close to 100 losses, they spent a lot of money on guys. Sometimes the pitching hasn't worked out with the money they spent. But I just think him reiterating that, like, look, we're spending what we can. We're also having to find out how much we got to spend on the HVAC system and things like that. And so they are invested in this. People can say what they want. I think maybe they had hoped to spend a little bit less. But as deals presented themselves with Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen, guys that both said they turned down deals, multi-year deals with other teams to be in Arizona, it was a no-brainer for Ken to open up the checkbook and say, Mike, get the deal done. Let's get the best deal we can to bring these guys back. It'll help sell more tickets because fans are invested in these players. And, you know, they feel there's some unfinished business from 2023, and they've been close the last 2 years. And now you got 15 guys on the roster that were on that team again with guys they brought back. So it's something that really from the World Series roster that they've brought back now. Paul Sewald, another one they just brought back. So they are trying to finish the job that started in 2023. They feel like they're right there on the cusp. And as things kind of progress better with health, Ken's very excited about what this could be.
Yeah, good stuff there. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate it. Jordan Spurgeon, he was out there yesterday. A lot around it, and appreciate Spurgeon his time. Let's move over to NASCAR, because on the weekend I was caught. If you follow Michael Jordan, like, NBC has been rolling Michael Jordan sit down with Mike Tirico out, and it's actually been painful television in my humble opinion, but that's just me. Michael Jordan is not seen very much. Michael Jordan is fully into NASCAR. He sued NASCAR last December, 2 months ago, and won. And so yesterday, Devin was down at Daytona 500, Devin Henry from our team. Devin was covering the Daytona 500, and this was Michael Jordan after it was over, and we got a little bit of video there. Michael Jordan's down there doing his thing, celebrating with everybody. And I think that's so cool. And a story that did not get a whole lot of play. This is MJ. This is the GOAT. And he's acting like a little kid down there, just having a great time, doing his thing, high-fiving with his teammates, holding up the trophy. Yeah, that's so cool. That was an underplayed story from this weekend with Mike and Jordan. All right. From there, let's see. I'm just going off a couple things that, yeah, the USA hockey. I do want to get in this. So the USA, they beat Germany. They are going to play. They're moving on. They won yesterday 5-1. They are not going to play Canada. Everybody's expecting the United States to skate against Canada at some point. They cannot skate against one another until it gets to the gold medal game, if they get that far, just so we're clear on that. John Wilner is next, Wilner Hotline, and then NFL Draft Talk with Daniel the Draftnik. I'm Brad Sussmat. John Wilner, as always, joins us every Monday as we talk about the college football, college basketball, college sports landscape, which changes by the minute. John can publish a column, and 2 hours later, it's old, it's dated, it's true. Forget about it. So over the weekend, the headline was blaring that the Big Ten has their suggestion. Was this newsy to you that the Big Ten is saying this is what we're going to do with the college football playoff from our point of view? Was this newsworthy, John?
There was some news. ESPN reported the details of the Big Ten's proposal for a 2014 playoff. And, you know, everybody knew they wanted a 2014 playoff, but some of the details were missing. And so there's a little bit more light shed on the situation, but they still have to get the SEC to agree. So what they've done is they have basically tried to compromise and say, all right, instead of just going straight from 12 teams to 24, let's play a couple of years of a 16-team playoff. That would be in the 27 and 28 regular seasons. And then in 29, we'll implement the 24-team playoff. So that is their hope to get the SEC to agree. The interesting pieces to the 24-team playoff are the home games. It would provide, so basically, eight teams would have a bye.
Got it.
So you'd play 16 teams would play eight games. The seeds 9 through 16 would have home games.
Okay.
And then the eight winners would advance.
Got it.
And then they would play the top eight seeds, which would also host. So you'd have 2 weekends in which eight teams are hosting home games. And I think that's an element that a lot of people want to add to the postseason somehow, is more home games. But the whole thing is tricky. And a 2014 playoff certainly requires getting rid of conference championship games. There's zero need for those. And they wouldn't fit in the calendar, because if you're going to do 24, you need more weekends. So everything would move up. And the playoff would start the second weekend of December, which is currently Heisman Trophy, Army Navy.
Right.
And basically, what is now conference championship weekend would be eliminated. The first Saturday of December, that would go away. So rivalry weekend would come on Thanksgiving, and then there'd be a week off, and then you'd jump right into the first round of the 2014 playoff. One piece that's very interesting, too, is that if they do this, there's a whole lot more games, right? They'd be going to 23 games.
Right.
That would give other networks a chance besides ESPN to have a piece of the playoff. Fox wants a piece of the playoff. Fox and the Big Ten are obviously very aligned. Fox owns the Big Ten's media rights. So the Big Ten is proposing something that Fox supports. Now, I have been told that this is not Fox pushing the Big Ten on the 24. The Big Ten wants to do it, but Fox also wants to do it. So that's another element, is that it helps, it benefits the Big Ten's TV partner.
Okay, so the Big Ten wants to go to 24 teams in the college football playoff, but make me king for a day. And it's, let's start mid-August with games. Let's not take Labor Day and just have a couple games because it's Labor Day weekend. I get it. There's not as many TV sets, but maybe there is now in this day and age of streaming, where Labor Day weekend isn't a throwaway. Let's get everything done by Thanksgiving week. Let's start the first week of December. Let's be done by the time we get to the Rose Bowl. And we're not sitting here at the end of January competing head-to-head with the NFL playoff games. This isn't that hard, John. It's not.
You're right. And there's a lot of elements there that people want to adopt. They want week zero, which is currently the Saturday before Labor Day, to be the start of the regular season for everybody. They want to figure out a way that the championship game is not December or January 25th, which it's going to be next year.
Crazy.
But getting to the point where the season ends on New Year's, you know, playing the championship game at the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl or alternating, the problem with that is the connection to the bowl games, including the Fiesta Bowl in your backyard, right? If you're going to have the semifinals or the championship game on New Year's, that means the quarterfinals have to be played before Christmas.
Correct.
Which means the Fiesta Bowl, for instance, would have to be willing to move up a week and or potentially not host a quarterfinal. They've got these six bowls that they're very tied to, and they have this rotation where four host the quarterfinals and two host the semifinals. Well, if you're playing your semis on New Year's Day to move your championship game up, then the Fiesta and Orange and you know Cotton can't host on New Year's Day as quarterfinals. They would have to be played before Christmas, and I don't know that the big bowls are going to be willing to do that.
All right.
You tell me, would the Fiesta Bowl be okay being played on December 22nd?
I don't, but here's the thing. I don't think the Fiesta Bowl has the power to say anything this day and age. I think this all comes down to TV network executives. At the end of the day, the Big Ten can say what they want to say. Bowl games can say what they want to say. It's going to be TV executives saying what they want to say. Like adding games up to 24 at neutral sites or home field sites, brilliant. Brings in extra revenue, extra games on TV. Brilliant. Everything, John, that you've talked about is extra money in the coffers in a day and age where these athletic departments have got to find ways to bend. They have to find ways to bend. And if you're going to go head-to-head with the NFL, you can go to week 17 and be January 8th. You can do that. But anything beyond that is just, I think, just suicide if you're the college football playoff people. You're going to get a number. You're not going to get near the number you would have.
Yeah. No, I agree. And if the NFL goes to 18 games, which Roger Goodell wants to do, then there's another week in January where it's a full slate of NFL action sucking up the oxygen. But the one piece that a lot of people are pushing back on, including the Big 12 with the 2014 playoff, is what does that do to the regular season? Right now, college football has the best regular season in sports because every game basically matters. But if you've got a 2014 playoff, a lot of those games don't matter. Now, here's an example. Oregon played USC this year. I believe it was the second to last game of the season for both teams. And it was an elimination game for the playoff. Right. The loser was going to have a hard time making the 12-team playoff. Well, that made the game a big deal nationally. USC Oregon's always a big deal on the West Coast, but it was a big game nationally. If it's a 2014 playoff, both of those teams would have been in. And so it's not a playoff elimination game. So the impact of that game and the interest across the country is reduced. That is the thing that college football executives are grappling with, is what would be the material impact on the regular season if we go to 24. If you're playing 24, there's going to be teams that are, you know, 8-4, maybe even 7-5, making the playoff, depending on what their conference record is. So there are some drawbacks, and that's one of the things that the ACC, the Big 12, the SEC are worried about.
Let's move over to BYU. You wrote a column about BYU and racist chants towards Mormon faith, LDS, this last weekend. What was the reaction that you had from that column, John?
Well, you know, a lot of folks agree that something needs to happen. I mean, almost everybody agrees that they need to do something. There have been four Big 12 campuses where students, and it's, to be clear, it's the students, right? They're in the stadium or they're in the arena, and they start with you know, a four-letter word, and then the Mormons. The issue is, how do you stop it? And what the Big 12 conference office is limited in what they can do. They have to be empowered by the campuses to impose sanctions and fines and all that. So it's a tough deal. I think they need to allow the officials to penalize the home teams if they hear anything. I think they need to allow the conference office to increase the penalty, the fines. And I think that the, you know, the executives, the coaches and athletic directors of the host teams need to be very proactive. Arizona did a great job before the BYU Arizona football game in October. Brent Brennan and Desiree Reed Francois both gave, had, you know, state public statements, video messages about respect for the for the Cougars, and it worked. I think you should, we should see that almost at every Big Ten campus, because it's been a problem at Colorado, Arizona, Oklahoma State, and Cincinnati. They've all had issues. At BYU's only been in the league a couple of years, and a quarter of this campuses have already had students engaging in this kind of behavior. So they've got to do something, but it starts with the campuses. The conference office is limited without the support of the campuses.
Good stuff as always. I appreciate your time and insights, John. Thanks.
Thanks, Brett.
And we're back with more after this timeout. Now we turn our attention to the NFL draft, as we do every week with Daniel the Draft Nick, brought to you by Harrah's Auction. Daniel, myself, and Hall of Famer Brian Urlacher will be at the Caesars Sportsbook breaking down the draft as it unfolds. Daniel's going to be calling picks. That will be on April 23rd, the draft this year held in Pittsburgh. But Harrah's Auction at the brand new Caesars Sportsbook. Daniel the Draft Nick, Brian Urlacher, and myself. All right, what's anything out there that's caught your eye before we get into the main topic, which is players on the back end? Any news, notes, players rising, falling from your view in the last week, Daniel?
Yeah, I wouldn't say much movement, but big news was, you know, the combine list officially got announced. And obviously you got so many people kind of saying, oh, this guy got snubbed, or how did this player make it? And, you know, teams get to vote on who gets to be there. You know, I think it's a very fair process. But some people who I kind of thought missed out was Cyrus Allen, the receiver out of Cincinnati, and Devon Marshall, the corner out of NC State, were two of my biggest, you know, quote unquote snubs, if you want to call them. But outside of that, you know, we got that combine. We don't know if Mendoza will throw yet. That is probably the biggest thing that you're going to wait to see. But no one's really come out fully to say who's throwing or not. I do think a lot of these quarterbacks in this class will benefit from throwing. But, you know, we'll have to see as we get closer to that that mark.
Okay, so there's always players that, and you're really good at projecting. You know, last year, what'd you just nailed a whole bunch of picks. I don't think you missed any in the top. What, it was just like one after the next. But there's always players, Daniel the Draft Nick, that come into the back end of the draft that maybe right now, mid-second, but then in the next 3-4 weeks, things change. Mm-hmm. They move into that back end of the first round. Needs change for teams too. Do you have some players that you think, you know, Brad, we're sitting here in February, but by the time we get to draft night out at Harrah's, there's going to be this player and that player in the first round conversation?
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest one is Chris Brazell, the receiver out of Tennessee. Chris Brazell, the second, big 6'5", 200-pound guy. And when you kind of think of Tennessee receivers, we had the exact same situation last year with Dante Thornton, who got picked in the fourth round by the Raiders last season. But you look at the difference between those two, similar body types, but Brazell is just so much more different in the where his ability to have that size, he's going to run a 4.4 in the 40s in about a week and a half. He is excellent body control and ability just to get in and out of his routes. His route running is very clean. He's very explosive for that size. He's a guy that I'm very excited to see compete at the combine, because he's going to run in the 4.4s. Teams are going to fall in love with just the size, his athletic ability. He was a Biletnikoff finalist this past season. His father played in the NFL. His brother is currently on Tennessee. So he has that athletic background. He's very, you know, confident as a player. You just see it with his tape. And he's one of the biggest guys to me that I think can stand out at the combine in about a week and a half. Keith Abney out of Arizona State is a guy who I don't think he's going to test well, per se. Measurables, obviously, on the shorter end of the stick when it comes to size. But I mean, we all, Arizona, fans are just kind of used to or kind of know his background with the indoor skating and things like that, the roller skating. Very, very fluid with his feet. When you watch him play, the way he breaks on balls, the way he's able to just read coverages, he's very instinctful. And I think teams, once teams get in the meeting room with him and ask him questions, I think you're going to see some teams fall in love with him in the combine process and the interview process. Interested to see how he tests and to get those numbers, but his hips are fluid, and I think you're going to see that stand out in the drills in Indianapolis. Another guy, Caleb Banks, was injured this past season, showed out at the Senior Bowl, 6'6", 330 pounds, started off at Louisville, transferred to Florida, decided to come back for his redshirt senior season this past season, and got a little bit unlucky with injury this past year. But overall, coming into 2025, I had him as a first-round player. I think a little bit of buzz, kind of, you get lost when you're not on the field. You don't get as much excitement, but I mean, he showed at the Senior Bowl. I mean, he is huge. He can just clog up holes, and once again, won't test particularly well because he's a defensive tackle who's 330 pounds. But when you just watch him play, when you get in the meeting room with him, I think teams are going to see that that love for the game. And then Dylan Thienemann, the safety out of Oregon, is another guy that I think can really sneak in the back half of that round one. You look at the Seahawks this year. Who was their big acquisition in the draft last season? And Nick Amonwori, who let Mike McDonald play nickel. Let him do whatever he wanted to. This is another guy who can play in the box. He can play in the slot. He played safety at Oregon. He started at Purdue for his first two seasons. He jumped on the scene quick, was on the third team AP All-American team in his freshman year at Purdue. Comes to Oregon, over 300 tackles in his career, 8 interceptions, 7 run stops against Indiana in the college football playoff. He is versatile, and you're seeing versatility is the name of the game in the NFL nowadays. And, Thienemann has that, and I'm excited to see, what team in that back half kind of gets excited to pick him. And then my last guy, R. Mason Thomas, the edge out of Oklahoma. You're going to see another one of those guys who, once we get to the combine, he's going to run, he's going to do all the athletic, and he is going to just wow people. Shamar Stewart was a guy like that last season, but the difference between Shamar Stewart and R. Mason Thomas is Thomas has the production, a little bit injured this season, but still had 28 total pressures, a little bit on the smaller size too, 6'2", 249 pounds, but has a lot of juice off that edge. He's very, very fast, coming off that edge.
Daniel, the draft, Nick, before I get you out of here, it's still Mendoza number one to the Raiders, right? 100%?
Yeah.
Finished?
I think the Clint Kubiak hire kind of solidified it. I think it has to be Mendoza. I don't see another way that he is not number one overall.
Daniel, the draft, Nick, delivering the goods. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me, Brad.